Welcome to the Dairy Farmers of Canada's research podcast series, Paths to On-Farm Excellence, where we discuss priority topics for Canadian dairy farmers. My name's Stephen Roach. I'm an epidemiologist with a passion for dairy cattle health and welfare. I did my master's and PhD trying to understand how farmers, their staff, and their advisors can work together as a team to improve. And I'm part of a team that's working with the Dairy Farmers of Canada to help showcase the latest in dairy research for Canadian dairy farmers, advisors, and their supply chain. You'll find this channel features a number of different series, from animal care to biosecurity to research summaries and beyond. This podcast series features conversations with farmers, veterinarians, nutritionists, hoof trimmers, and other farm advisors, researchers, and many other industry stakeholders. Our goal is really to provide farmers and their advisors with useful information that can be applied back home on the farm. If you like the content here, don't forget to subscribe to our feed and tell your friends. With the increased adoption of automated milking systems, so too have we seen an increase in research on how we manage these systems to optimize production, health, and welfare. We know these systems offer many advantages from a labor standpoint and provide the opportunity to have more precision when it comes to management. When it comes to udder health specifically, we know that dry-off management is critical to reduce the risk of intramammary infection. With robots, it can be easier to manipulate milking frequency and feeding management at dry-off. The question is, how do we manage a reduction in milking and feeding allowance leading up to dry-off to manage milk yield and udder health? And how are other housing factors and management practices at dry-off during the dry period and around parturition associated with udder health and early lactation? This is what we're going to explore today. Our next discussion takes place with Dr. Trevor DeVries, a professor and Canada Research Chair in Dairy Cattle Behavior and Welfare in the Department of Animal Bioscience at the University of Guelph. Dr. DeVries' areas of research include understanding the effects of feeding management on the behavior of dairy cattle, the effects of early feeding management and housing on calf and replacement heifer feeding behavior, and the effects of housing and management on the behavioral patterns and risk of illness in dairy cows. So, let's jump in. Well, Trevor, thanks for taking the time to chat again. We've had the chance to already chat a little bit about robotic milking systems, some of the work you've been doing in the past and more recently on that topic. And here we'll continue to delve into some of those topics, but with a slightly different focus or flavor. But thanks very much for taking the time to chat today.
No, thank you for the invite. And it's a pleasure to talk about this this research that we're doing.
So again, I think it's always nice to get a little bit of an intro from you in terms of where you come from, how you sort of fit in the dairy industry, and how you fit into this topic in particular. So tell us a little bit about your sort of research program, who you are, and sort of how you came to be where we are today.
My name again is Trevor DeVries. I'm a professor and Canada Research Chair with the University of Guelph. Been in a faculty position with the University of Guelph for almost 16 years, primarily focusing my research on dairy cow behavior, nutrition, management, welfare, using the behavior of cows in a lot of our work to understand how they respond to variations in their nutrition and management, in housing, with the goal at the end of the day of really trying to identify things that are good for the cow from a behavior, from a welfare perspective, from a health and production, and then translating those things into positives from the producer standpoint, right? Realizing too, right, that that's the business we're in is making milk, and we need to do that, not only efficiently, but at the same time do that with the care and welfare of our animals in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. So you've an aspect of the work that you've been doing with a number of collaborators here in Canada, and I probably others as well that I'm not aware of, has been looking at dairy cows specifically at dry-off, and also adding in that context of automated milking systems. What sort of got you interested in that specific area? Are there sort of context that's relevant to know in terms of how you got into that area of research?
Yeah, and it's actually an interesting one because it takes me right back to the beginning of my faculty appointment with the University of Guelph, going back to 2007 when I was initially actually looking for faculty jobs. I was attracted to the University of Guelph, and specifically through an emeritus professor with the University of Guelph, Dr. Ken Leslie, who at the time was part of a large research project that was going on in Canada focused on mastitis and milk quality. And that was the very beginning of what we know as the mastitis network in Canada. And that mastitis network had just started, and one of their first large kind of endeavors in research was a national project to look at the mastitis situation in Canada and conduct a variety of kind of sub projects at the same time related to milk quality and mastitis management on Canadian dairy farms. And so part of my coming to the University of Guelph was actually influenced by the fact that this project was going on and they were actually looking for someone to help coordinate some of that. And so Dr. Ken Leslie at the time and another colleague at the University of Guelph, Dr. Dave Kelton, were very interested in having me partake in that. I came in with this behavior and nutrition background. I did have an interest in dairy cow health, and they thought this was a really good fit because they thought it was a good opportunity for that mastitis kind of research network to also dig into the realm of cow behavior and cow welfare and some of those aspects there as well. So that kind of that was the initial foray into the world of mastitis and milk quality, and we did over the years as through the mastitis network, a variety of projects related to, understanding how cow behavior specifically, how that responds to feeding management, housing management, and then obviously the risk of, poor udder health and milk quality in cows, and did a variety of projects over the years. And then in the last, 5 years or so, as we've started to become more and more interested in the adoption and use of robotic technology, one of the things that we realized was that there was a real kind of a hole, so to speak, in terms of when it comes to research and available knowledge in management of those systems related to udder health. And again, there's others working on this, and there is some. I don't want to paint a picture that there's nothing, but there are some very specific things that we identified as being under research to this point and could be very important from a management standpoint. And dry off was one of those things that we identified, and specifically because one of the things that's kind of unique about robotic milking is that we are managing milking of those individual cows, and we can manage the milking frequency of those cows at different points in their lactation and specifically at the end of their lactation, which again may be a challenge in some other scenarios. And when we think about dry off and the potential importance of dry off, we have some real opportunities to do some very specific management in robots that we can't do anywhere else.
Yeah, more control, I guess, at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So you've been looking at sort of or trying to understand, perhaps factors influencing intramammary infection and influencing sort of some of these dry off management practices in robotic systems. That's been, some of the focus of work under the Mastitis Network. What specifically did you sort of set out there for?
Yeah, and one of our key interests was looking at whether or not we could try to identify ways of practically reducing the risk of infection over the dry period through kind of that late lactation robotic milking management of those cows, and then also look at management factors specifically or non-specifically to robot farms might be related to udder health over the dry period, knowing that again there's risk of infection, of udder infection in cows at all stages of lactation. Typically the kind of time points when we see highest rates are in and around immediately at dry off, and so we've paid a lot of attention to how we dry off cows, lots of questions around use of antibiotics or antimicrobials around that time period, which We're seeing more and more pressure to reduce the usage from a prudence standpoint, and I think and so lots of research on whether or not we move to away from, say, blanket dry cow therapy to more selective or even a non-use of antimicrobials around the time of dry off. And again, lots of good progress in that. Part of that, though, and that's kind of stems into or leads into why we got really an interest in this, is that some of the issues that we see related to maybe risk of infection at that time period is related to the production level of cows. We feed cows and we've genetically selected cows for good production levels, which is great, and good persistency in lactation. But that also means that 10 months into their lactation, for many cows, are still producing a very high volume of milk. And if we immediately dry those animals off abruptly or cold turkey, so to speak, what we see is that those cows can actually, from two perspectives, be negatively affected. There's a potential udder engorgement which may occur, which may actually be painful to cows, and there's been other research to show that. And so that in itself may be a welfare issue for those animals. And then that can also then increase the risk of leakage in that early dry period, and actually increase the risk of bacterial entry into the mammary gland and actually risk of infection during the dry period. And then that potential then spills over into, and that's where I was kind of going to earlier, is that our second, probably our bigger time period of risk of infection is early in the next lactation, which again may be related to factors related to that transition of that cow at that calving period. But we know from other research too that can go back in time to the whole dry period, and even back to how that cow was initially dried off. And so that really set up this research, which was focused on, can we do something different with robots, specifically related to maybe reducing milk production in these cows, these higher producing cows? Can we manipulate their milking and feeding settings in the robot to do that? And then taking kind of a broader look at whether or not, again, with a bigger data set, looking at if there are other management housing factors that are related to udder health in these cows in that kind of critical time period.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. So talk to us a little bit about how you went about exploring those two objectives.
Yeah, so the first kind of objective, specifically looking at how we manipulate production leading up to dry off, we actually did with a multi-farm study. It was a controlled, randomized controlled trial that we actually did on a subset of dairy farms in Quebec, in the Saint-Hyacinthe region of Quebec. This project, and I mentioned a couple of the people like Dr. Dave Kelton before from the University of Guelph as a collaborator. We also had collaborations with Dr. Herman Barkema from the University of Calgary, as well as Dr. Simon Dufour from University of Montreal. And so this study particularly was a collaboration between myself and Dr. Simon Dufour, where we both had graduate students who in common wanted to look at similar things. And so we actually combined our efforts and ran our studies at the same time. And a cohort of dairy farms in the Saint-Hyacinthe region, all robotic milking farms. And what we did on those farms, specifically related to our objectives, was randomly assign cows as they approached dry off in the weeks leading up, in the 2 weeks leading up to dry off. We either changed their milking settings to either restrict how often they could go to the robot per day, or kind of left it as they would have been, or we changed their feeding settings in the robot. So typically we provide cows a little bit of feed in the robot that is used from a nutritional standpoint, but it's also used as an enticer for those cows to actually go to the robot. And so the prediction would be that if we reduce the amount of feed that was available to those cows, that would not only maybe reduce a little bit of the nutrients they're consuming, but more so reduce their enticement to go to the robot. And so the idea would be that, that basically with restrictions in their milking permission as well as their feed allowance in the robot, we would be able to bring down the milk production of those cows in those 2 weeks leading up to dry off.
So what were some of the things you found exploring this specific objective?
Yeah, and again, is one of those things where some of the results we saw definitely were not necessarily surprising, and they actually followed really what we wanted to achieve. And that was really to show that we could, say, decrease the milk production of these cows in that time period with those specific robot settings. Mm-hmm. And as I described before, that's what makes kind of robots unique, in that for many of our producers, if we think of conventionally milking producers, specifically those milking with parlors, to implement a good dry-off procedure whereby we reduce, say, the frequency of milkings of cows, and we do that over a certain period of days, and to try bring the milk production of those cows down, becomes very difficult. As we get to larger farms that maybe we can batch dry-off cows at the same time, but we have more opportunity there. But even in those situations, you probably need, a specialized pen even to keep those animals and to separate them and to feed them maybe a little differently, put them on a lesser nutrient dense diet, right, to try help bring milk production down that way as well. And so there can be some challenges there. And so that's why we were actually really interested in doing this with robots, because we do have that opportunity to, within the management system, specifically focus on individual cows and how we can manipulate those two things, which is their milking permission or milking frequency, and then also their nutrition to some degree as well. And so this is something that in theory can be done, and we know people are already doing this. But again, when we started out on this on this line of thinking and putting this idea together years back, there was no research done on this, and there was no real proof to show that this actually worked. And so we wanted to just put kind of numbers to this, right? And so, part of that was just proof of the idea that we can do this. And so, we were able to show, and I guess that's the kind of first take home, that, we can successfully drop the milk production of these cows fairly well with kind of those restrictions. Now, it's an initial kind of study. There probably is more work that can be done. One of the things that we showed, the average kind of milk production of these cows coming into dry off was around 25 kilograms per day. And again, probably around that stage of lactation, that's probably what we would often see. But some farms, that can be much higher than that. Mm-hmm. You'll still have some cows who are at 305 days in lactation, and they're still producing 35, 40 kilograms of milk per day. There were a few of those within the study, not all, but the average is about 25. And we were able to drop their milk production by, on average, about by five kilograms or so, plus or minus, which again, I believe that is important, right, from that dry-off perspective. Is it as low as we potentially need to go? It might not be. There's some previous work showing, specifically related to udder discomfort, mm-hmm. and the welfare aspects of dry-off, that we need to get down to probably closer to 15 kilograms of milk production per day. And then also from an udder health perspective too, that's where some of the data has showed that we see some benefit there as well, from both short and long-term benefit from the udder health of those cows. And so, again, while, we were able to experiment to kind of do what we wanted to do, the bigger question is, could we do more? And that's, again, a question for future research. Is there, do we need to be more restrictive in some of our settings? And the answer is probably yes, right? Also, look at whether or not, these things are having, really the benefits we want to see as well. Right. And we were really focused on that kind of period leading up to dry off and making sure that we were able to reduce milk production. We did then look at those cows. We followed those cows across the dry period into the next lactation. What we saw and observed was that those different treatments that we applied to those cows, the restrictions in milking, restrictions in feeding, did not have any negative impacts on those cows moving into their next lactation, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
On a positive side, it would have been great to see positive benefits. We did not observe that either, right? So we didn't see any negative. We didn't necessarily see any positive. So at minimum, what we probably observe in these cows is, yeah, lesser milk production and potentially, again, based on other work that's been done, probably from a cow welfare perspective, benefits from those cows early in their dry period. We do have some data that, again, is still forthcoming related to this project. As again, in 2020, we faced some slowdowns. This is right in the middle of when we were running this project. We actually had to cut this project a little bit short because of the pandemic. And as a result of that, there was kind of a trickle effect on some of the data that was collected, mm-hmm. and specifically related to milk samples that were taken for bacterial culturing and speciation of those pathogens okay. that we were able to collect from those milk samples. And so we're still working on that data. And the hope would be able to show that we can actually look at maybe whether or not the treatments that we imposed on those cows actually had an impact on maybe reducing new infections mm-hmm. in those cows. And so again, we had samples, quarter level milk samples of those cows prior to dry off as well as into the next lactation. So we're able to potentially look at across that time period whether or not there was maybe a difference in incidence of new infections as well as cured infections.
Yeah.
So that's another one, right? So we know that some cows do dry off with a high somatic cell count because they have maybe an underlying infection at that time period. And so, and that's partly the reason why we've traditionally given cows antimicrobial therapy at that time period as well to get rid of maybe any kind of present or latent infections that might be in those cows. And so the idea would be, yeah, maybe our treatments also then had an impact there. And so again, those results are still forthcoming.
Sure.
So,
yeah, no, yeah. And it sounds logical and interesting too, to see how that actually unfolds. It really interesting results on that first objective there. And it sounds like, yeah, again, the take home is you can manipulate there and maybe some more tweaking and tinkering to maybe optimize that, if that's a fair word. As we look towards your second objective, maybe sort of taking a broader look at practices associated with milk quality, what did you sort of see there?
Yeah, and that was a interesting project objective in that it was a bit opportunistic because at the same time this was going on, we were conducting our national study looking at robotic milking across Canada on a large sample of herds, almost 200 farms. Specifically focused on management and production and some measures of milk quality. Within that data set, though, we realized we had some really powerful data that we could potentially use to also look at this this question of dry period and milk quality in and around that time period. And so we had individual cow milk recording data, so somatic cell count data from before dry off and post calving in the next lactation for a very large sample of cows, over 14,000 cows mm-hmm. from a large sample of farms, over 160 farms from across Canada in that case. And so what we were able to then do with that is then look at changes in those individual cows in their somatic cell count. Both we looked at kind of absolute change in the somatic cell score, so a normalized score of the somatic cell count of those cows, as well as categorizing their somatic cell count as being high or low, kind of at a subclinical threshold of 200,000 cells per ml, which is a fairly common kind of threshold we would use to classify a cow's somatic cell count as being high or low. And so what we're able to do then is look at the cow's changes in somatic cell count, look at whether or not, say, they developed a high somatic cell count over the dry period, and then correlate that back to differences that we saw in those cows as well as those cows' management on those farms in across the dry period. And so, again, some interesting results and probably not too surprising. So things like using antimicrobials, right? Prophylactic use of antibiotics, blanket dry cow therapy, what we call that, right? Mm-hmm. Being protective. And we know that, again, right? We also know that use of things like teat sealants, right, can be also important, right, from controlling the risk of udder infection, preventing those bacteria from getting into those teat ends to start with. And so, we observe those as being protective of those cows from an udder health perspective and around that time period. So not really any different than what we'd see in commercial kind of settings. But we did observe also some interesting, management related to the cows in those systems as well. So different than maybe conventional. So for example, on farms where they introduce cows immediately onto the robot after calving, versus those farms that may have milked those cows in a different scenario for a time period. So a few days or a week or more, maybe in a calving area or in a parlor yet, right? Those farms that did that versus putting those cows on the robots immediately, those cows actually had better udder health, and mm-hmm. as reflected by lower somatic cell counts and lower changes in their somatic cell counts. Now, again, we don't know exactly why these are associations that we observed. It could be reflective of just those farms maybe that waited to put their cows on the robot, having other kind of management practices that are a little bit more conducive to closer monitoring and management of those cows in and around that time period. So we can't conclude any direct kind of effect of that association, but it's likely that it is probably reflective of some difference in management of those animals, where mm-hmm. those animals, if they are maybe a little bit more closely monitored before, say, going immediately into the milking herd and put on the robot, that might have some benefit from an udder health standpoint. We also saw some other things related to dry pen management of those cows. Again, not necessarily unique to a robotic scenario, but some differences between farms that, put their cows maybe immediately or kept their cows in either pens with stalls versus no stalls, so pack pens mm-hmm. in and across the whole dry period. And again, those farms that kept their cows in only pack pens, actually we observed higher somatic cell counts or higher risk of new infection in those cows. Now, again, we don't have further data to suggest why, but it could be differences in things like hygiene or
right.
Of cows in that scenario. That would be something to follow up on, right? And it's something we didn't have access because this was data that we kind of mined, so to speak, and we weren't necessarily going on those farms to look at the hygiene of those individual cows. That would be interesting because I think that would probably maybe explain that. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't manage your cows in pack pens across the whole dry period, but it might mean that, if you do, you probably need to spend maybe a little bit more attention or put a little bit more attention on making sure that bedding is kept dry and mm-hmm. clean and the cows stay dry and clean at the same time, right? And that's probably what that result is really, telling us.
Yep. Very cool. Do we take these results and explore these relationships further to try and get at cause and effect, like you say, or is this just food for thought and maybe just helps to, verify some of the things we think we know about risk factors for intramammary infection?
Well, I think there's two things there. One is it's always good to be able to replicate some of those things that we do know, mm-hmm. right? Especially so some of these things have been shown in other studies of commercial farms mm-hmm. and others have been shown in more controlled kind of studies. Now, when we go back onto farms and we see the same thing and that the associations we see fit with what other research has shown in the past, that's always comforting, right? Because it just provides us with more evidence, so to speak, that what has been observed in the past isn't just a fluke or right a one-off, but these are actual things that do actually matter on farm. And so associations are associations. They don't tell us cause and effect, but if you see the same associations over and over again, it starts to build up a little bit of a case, right? Yep. For the fact that, maybe there is, or maybe we can draw some more kind of inference in terms of some of the causes here, mm-hmm. right? At the same time, it's always good, as you kind of mentioned, that we explore some of these things further, right? And so that would be, yeah, some of our plans moving forward too, right? Is to, can we then start to look at some of these individual factors and try to, yeah, maybe design more controlled studies to really dig in to explain some of the associations that we are seeing, for sure.
And I guess too, you know, you mentioned before about this push towards selective dry cow therapy, and you commented on, you know, obviously an important association there in terms of the use of antimicrobials, and our industry seems to be pushed that way, and many people are doing it successfully and others not so much. And, you know, we see protocols coming out on how to do that successfully. And I guess we'll use the word tinkering and manipulating there a little bit too, to figure out how do we optimize that, maybe in a robot scenario, maybe across the board, regardless of facility. Is that an area that we probably need to dig into?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's at least like some of this work is, again, just kind of laying groundwork for us to do more work in that area, right? To say that, yeah, we have some opportunities. Like, yeah, we know we know that, right? Like that blanket dry cow therapy can work, but again, the prudent use of antimicrobials probably tells us that we shouldn't be using blanket dry cow therapy, right? And we need to be moving towards more selective. And so the question then becomes: is, yeah, are there things that we can do in different scenarios that are going to help us implement that? With robots, for example, we actually have more systems where we can actually have more kind of continuous monitoring of milk quality, right? So sure. Inline, online, yep. Somatic cell counters and things like that, right? And that we can probably maybe identify even those cows that are better suited for a selective dry cow therapy. And then at the same time, implement some of these other management things like we identified in our first study in this area, like looking at trying to bring the milk production down of those cows, right? And maybe that's going to vary depending on what the production level is of those cows, right? So a high production cow maybe needs a bit more time and to bring her production down versus a cow that's maybe low at that time period anyways, and we don't necessarily need to do that for that cow.
Yep.
And we have that opportunity, and that's like kind of the beauty there is it's not that we have to create pens of cows and move cows around. We can actually do these things within the system that they're operating in these robotic milking systems. So I think there's some real kind of neat opportunities there.
Yeah, and I guess it just goes in line with what you had mentioned before about it's potentially building in more efficiency into a system that was designed to be efficient in many regards. And real-time decision support is going to continue to refine the way we practice, I think. So very cool. Trevor, thanks for taking the time to chat with us. Really look forward to seeing how some of this research unfolds, and thanks for sharing what you've learned thus far.
Thanks again for the invite. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Farmers of Canada's Research Podcast Series. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. For more information, please visit dairyfarmersofcanada.ca/en/dairy-research. This podcast was narrated by myself, Stephen Roach, edited and produced by Carly Wright. Thank you to our guests and to you for listening. The project is part of Dairy Research Cluster 3, a national research funding program made possible by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada's Agri-Science Clusters program, the Dairy Farmers of Canada, Lactinet, and Novalay.